Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It's Saturday, and if you're watching over the webcam, the sun is just peeking up over the horizon there here in Hawaii on the island of Oahu. And boy, what a week it has been. What a week it has been. Obviously, right now, the top story that's all over the media and everything, and I'll admit I stayed up late and watched the reading of the verdicts, but O.J. Simpson has been found guilty on all counts, all charges stemming from this armed burglary and kidnapping in Nevada, basically related to what Simpson says was an attempt to recover some stolen sports memorabilia. And it was amazing. The jury basically took hardly any time to basically find him guilty on every single charge. Ironically enough, he was convicted of these crimes 13 years to the day following his acquittal for the double murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and her friend Ron Goldman. And I cannot help but think that a lot of people are taking a great deal of satisfaction in these verdicts, both because of the popular view that O.J. Simpson did get away with murder earlier and was only able to get away because he had so much money, and more recently, of course, for that tacky book that he put out, you know, How I Would Have Done It Had I Really Been Guilty, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. I don't think we have to worry about riots following these convictions. I think a lot of people are, you know, he did it to himself. And I remember watching last night and just thinking, you know, it's 13 years late, but it does look like he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. Now, there's going to be appeals. They're going to claim the jury was biased and prejudiced by Simpson's past history and so forth and so on. And it's probably going to drag on for quite some time. But at the moment, he is in prison. No bail is allowed. And a lot of people are saying, okay, one way or the other, you know, it finally caught up with him. And I remember watching the verdicts being read and turning to my wife and saying, here's a guy who had such a wonderful life, and he got away with a capital crime. And why he didn't say, you know, I'm not going to risk that again. I'm going to just, you know, I got lucky. I can't count on that again. I'm just going to be on the straight and narrow and clean up my life and try and do it right. And instead, he just, I don't know, he just went the other way. And he pulls this crazy stunt with guns and sports memorabilia. I mean, who cares? Who really cares? I mean, we've got a sports memorabilia shop just down here. They're dying on the vine. Nobody buys the stuff anymore. It's a passing fad. I don't know. I just don't understand it. Now, the reason I said justice has caught up with him, I know there's a lot of people who are still debating whether or not O.J. Simpson was really guilty of the murders, and, well, the jury of his peers acquitted him. He must be innocent. No. What a jury acquittal means is the jury wasn't convinced. And our whole system is set up under the theory that it is better to allow a guilty person to go free than to wrongfully convict an innocent man or woman. Unfortunately, it has happened in the past that we have done so, such as Bruno Richard Hauptmann and a bunch of others. There's some websites that are devoted to that. But in this case, I have a little personal anecdote to share with you, because 13 years ago, my half-brother was one of the law enforcement officers at the L.A. County Jail in the little visiting area when O.J. Simpson literally screamed out at Rosie Grier, who was even then a minister, ordained minister. O.J. screamed out to him, yes, I did it. I killed her. And Judge Lance Ito in the Simpson trial, for some reason, blocked that. Now, the rationale given in the case of Rosie Grier was that as an ordained minister, he is sort of kind of maybe covered by attorney-client privilege, which is stretching a point into an ellipse. But at the same time, Judge Ito also prevented any of the other people in that detention, that visiting area, from being called as a witness to O.J.'s essential confession of having done the crime. So because of that, and everybody talks to everybody in Los Angeles, it got around what O.J. had said to Rosie Grier, and pretty much everybody said, okay, that's it. He confessed to it, and he got away with it, and he walked away with it. And so why he would be so stupid as to do this thing in Las Vegas. Okay, well, good. He's in jail. Fine. If you disagree with me, of course, or anything else we're going to talk about during the next 2 hours, the phone number here at the show is 1-800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. And I'm going to ask you a favor. We're finding out, or I'm finding out, rather, that more and more radio stations, real honest-to-goodness radio, are carrying the show than I was previously aware. So when you call in and talk to Ethan, who's our control room wizard today, just mention if you're hearing the show over the radio and what that station is that you're currently listening on, because we're keeping a little list and checking it twice, and we're going to find out who's naughty or nice. Which brings me to the second news story that we're seeing on the corporate media today. They are pushing the Christmas shopping season. Now that the bailout is passed and the economy is going to be wonderful, although you shouldn't expect to see it for several months, but now we've all got to be thinking about just how we're going to pay for the obligatory Christmas shopping season. And I got to tell you, it is... First of October, I'm already Christmased out, because at least out here in Hawaii, the Christmas decorations and packaging and the little inflatable lawn decorations have been in the local bulk stores since August. And, you know, I remember walking down the aisle at our local Sam's and seeing all the stuff and saying, whoa, you know, we're still in summer and they're pushing the Christmas stuff. And the warning is on the wall. When we get into November, December, the retailers know we're not going to have any money for Christmas shopping. So they're trying to push it now. They're trying to push it now to get it started. Because without that big orgy of Christmas shopping at the end of every year, the retail companies are going to look really, really bad to their stockholders. And we've had several miserable Christmases. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm burned out on it. And, you know, every year I keep saying, oh, I want a Christmas tree this year. And by the time we get around to that part of it, I say, nah, I'm tired of it. I don't want to even look at it anymore. Besides, I don't know about you, it's hard for me to get into this idea of peace on earth, goodwill toward men, when we're bombing the people that you see in those little nativity setups in order to steal their oil. I'm having a severe conflict with that, and that's another reason I can't get into feeling Christmassy or holiday-wise or anything like that. You know, but I do design our own Christmas cards, and I will go that far, and we do get gifts for the family and for certain important clients that we're sucking up to for next year's business. But other than that, I don't know. I think everybody's going to get cookies this year, home-baked cookies. Uncle Mike and Auntie Claire's home-baked Hawaiian-style Christmas cookies. Anyway, taking a look at some of the other news. Obviously, as we continue the show today, we're almost to the end of this quarter. We're going to be talking about the bailout, otherwise known as the U.S. government taking $700 billion away from you and giving it to the banks, so that the banks can turn around and loan it back to you at interest. That is really what the bailout has been all about. And all the fancy words and all the little things and all the continuing, you guys don't get it. Yeah, we get it. You're taking our money to give to the banks so they can loan it back to us at interest. That's what it is. We get it. Believe me, we really, really do. A lot of anger out there. I'm getting a tremendous amount of openly hostile, openly, not toward me, openly angry emails. Really, I mean, stuff I don't even dare put it up on the website. We'll have the cops in here saying, you give me those email addresses right now. So, you know, people are very, very angry, and I think this weekend they're going to be sitting down and figuring out what they're going to do about it, because most of the people I'm getting writing into the website and to the show are saying, we cannot let this sit without challenge. All right, the magic music means it's time to take another break here. We're going to break for some commercials. Again, call in the show, 800-259-9231. Ethan is twiddling the dials and feeding the giant mutant hamster that powers all of this stuff. So when you call in, be nice to him, say pleasant things, tell him what radio station you're hearing us on, and we will be back after these words from our sponsor.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And the phone lines are lighting up. We've got Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome back to the show.
Yes, thank you, Mike. It's always good to speak to you. And particularly on a fine Sunday morning here in Oklahoma in the fall, my favorite time of the year.
Okay.
It's 70 degrees outside.
You must be on the other side of the international dateline from me because it's Saturday where I'm sitting.
Oh, what did I say?
It doesn't matter. What's on your mind today?
Oh, well, a couple of things. For one thing, I think, you know, you were speaking about the emails you were getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I spoke to my uncle last night on the telephone, and he lives in Tulsa. And he's a rock-ribbed Republican. He is put out about this whole deal. I mean, he really is. I mean, he's just fit to be tied, as most people are.
Oh, there,
that's a term we use here, fit to be tied. I never thought about that. But anyway.
Well, I got to tell you, I got emails coming in here. I open them up, and the monitor starts steaming. I mean, that's how bad it's getting out there. You know, I get a lot of people, and then I have a lot of emails from people coming in saying, I'm so sad about this. And, of course, my answer to that is, don't be sad. Be angry.
That's it.
You know, be pissed off. You know, sad doesn't do anybody any good. You know, I mean, screw anger management. I'm annoyed. And, you know, the other good part about that is that if you're angry, anger kills fear. If you're sad, you can still be afraid. And, of course, the government wants you to be afraid. But if you get angry, I mean just seeing red angry, then you're not going to feel afraid anymore. And that is what most concerns the government. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons they've got all those troops back from Iraq, you know, standing out on the streets glaring at us as we walk by to try and remind us that, you know, if you do something the government doesn't like, they will shoot you.
Yes. Well, you know, I understand. Matter of fact, I'm a veteran. I was in the Air Force 35 years ago during the late unpleasantness called the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, they sent me to Germany, so I basically, you know, kind of skated on that deal. But sometimes after dealing with the federal government and having worked for them, and as you know, for you know, I'm retired from them, I've had anger issues before because I could see the criminal enterprise that I was working for. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And one fellow that I know that goes to the VA hospital here, and he says, you got to take the anger management class. And I told him, nah, I'd probably just tell them all to go to hell. You know,
so. We actually have a T-shirt at the What Really Happened store that says, you know, blankety blank anger management.
Right, yeah. I love it.
That's one of our top sellers.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, yeah, this whole deal is, it's bogus. It's
mm-hmm.
This is the end of the republic if people don't stand up. This is Roman Empire collapse time. This is what this is all about.
No, the United States that we grew up with, died yesterday when we were moved onto a fascist economic model.
Absolutely.
And that is the absolute truth.
Okay, well, I'll let someone else see. You say the lines are lighting up. Well, I'll let you go to some more of the lights there. So.
All right. Well, Clarence, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and please call in again. We're going to switch over to Mike in Georgia. Mike, aloha. What is on your mind this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Rivera. I called all of my representatives, both the federal and the state, and basically, I got a pretty good response out of my congressman, John Barrow. At least he did what I wanted him to do. Both of my senators stabbed us in the back. That's Chamber Bliss and Ikeson. And Chamber Bliss is coming up for reelection.
Mm-hmm.
But on the state level, I got a good personal response from my representatives in that they called me and spoke to me for a long time on the phone. And one of them indicated that he was in opposition to the bailout, and everyone, his political associates were too. But I didn't see anybody on the state level come forward and make any kind of public statement about this. And I'm wondering if anybody else had any success with that. Our governor, after it happened, emailed me back and told me that it was a federal matter.
Yeah, it definitely would be. But the other problem to remember is that the corporate media was very much in favor of this bailout. They weren't even pretending to be objective. And so anybody who really was speaking out against it got very, very little exposure at all. It was a very, very biased and filtered presentation there. Now, as far as, you know, the bailout itself is concerned, you know, we all know it's just this tremendous ripoff of the American people. We know there's a lot of anger right now at all these Congress critters that voted for it, and especially, and perhaps deservedly so, a lot of anger is reserved for those members of the House of Representatives who voted the bill down on Monday and then reversed themselves and voted yes for it on Friday, and did so pretty much without any cogent explanation, you know, other than it was going to be a disaster if we didn't, and you just don't understand why. And mostly it's that part about implying that we're too stupid to understand what's going on. Frankly, I think there's some aspect to this whole deal that is still very much being hidden from the American people. But I'll tell you, here in Hawaii right now, you know, we're batting, you know, 0-for-3 right now, because both of our senators, Inouye and Akaka, voted for the bailout, and our local representative in this district, Abercrombie, originally voted no, was on the record as saying he was opposed to this, but he also switched on Friday. And so right now he's definitely on my does not get a Christmas card list. And I don't know, in 2010 I might just run against him. I'm seriously thinking about it. I'm that angry about it.
Well, I've got one good thing. When you were talking about the deterioration of the homes that were lost due to this financial fiasco and everything,
mm-hmm.
at least we can do this post, use this post 9/11 demolition techniques, you know, now that you can melt structural steel at a much lower temperature, and we got this rapid fire phenomena.
Yeah, just throw a cup of kerosene on them and they'll fall into their footprint. Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay.
That's good. Yes, that's a good technique. Good idea. Good idea. And,
okay,
so we should. Yeah, you got it. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right.
Yeah, very good idea. We'll just get little balsa wood airplanes, and we'll throw them into these abandoned homes, and they'll just collapse into their footprint and can be carried away. Wonderful idea from Mike there that we can think about. All right, well, we're coming down to the end of the half hour here, and when we come back from this next break, I do want to talk about the bailout. And, yeah, we can have some gallows humor about it and everything, but the bottom line is this has tremendously transformed the United States. This morning we are not the nation that we were 24 hours ago. The entire basic structure of our economic system has been changed to the detriment of the American people. I think to the detriment of future generations. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on. And I'm going to basically point out that what Congress just did may not even actually be legal, and sadly, that is probably not going to stop them from continuing anyway. So as the second hand comes down here toward the bottom of the clock, I'm going to take a deep breath here and remind you that if you want to join us on the air, as Clarence and Mike just did, the phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Remember, the more you call in, the less you have to listen to me talk. So grab those phones right now, and we will be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And let me adjust my levels here just a little tiny bit. We're getting some emails from our listeners. Anger, finally. The revolution will not be organized. Everyone must do what they feel is appropriate for them. Civil disobedience is the order of the day. I surely have been waiting to see some form of outrage. And then the listener appended the video clip from Boston Legal, the closing arguments for the episode Stick It, which is one of the most popular videos out there on the Internet about nonpayment of taxes as a form of protest. So with that as a segue, I want to cover something. I was going to do this later in the show, but this is as good a time as any. there is a lot of anger. There's just no question there's a lot of anger. And people are saying, you know, what are we going to do about it? You know, what's going on? Is it time for the tar and feathers and the guillotines and everything like this? So I want to be very, very clear about this. I don't like violence, not even in movies and TV shows I work on where it's fake. All right. And I don't want to encourage anybody to do anything violent or illegal. Mostly, I don't want anybody out here to give the government an excuse to impose extraordinary control over our lives. So I know you're angry, and I encourage you to find things to do to express that anger, but I encourage you to keep it legal. Non-cooperation, non-violent, the way Gandhi did, just stop working within the system is one way to do it. Another way, and I understand this is already happening, is go to the bank. Take your money out. Leave enough to cover the checks you've got outstanding. Take the rest out. Stop using your credit cards. Stop borrowing money. Start unlinking from the matrix. All of this is legal to do. They can't arrest you and jail you for going to the bank and taking your money back. It's perfectly legal. It's part of the contract. I think if enough people took their money out of the banks and the government said, hold, you've got to leave your money in there, you know, by government dictate, I think that would accelerate the process. So try to find ways to express your anger and get your money back and take care of yourself without giving the government an excuse to line the troops up in the middle of the street and say, well, you're all being a bunch of revolutionary anarchist commo fag junkies, or whatever they're going to call us this time. And express your anger that way. Obviously, express your anger at the ballot box. More than that, volunteer to be a poll watcher. We know there's going to be massive vote fraud this election. We've already seen it during the primary season. That's a good way to express your anger. Get involved in defeating the vote fraud. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Chris in Florida. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Well, speaking of non-payment of taxes, I have a method that I've thought up, and I thought was, you might say, is too crazy to work, but it works for me. 12 years ago, when I attempted to pay $300 in traffic tickets with lawful money, which would be defined under Title 12 of the U.S. Code, Section 152, says the terms lawful money and lawful money of the United States shall be construed to mean gold and silver coin of the United States. So when I went to the clerk of the court and I offered her silver eagles, she told me they had to be rolled. I went then to the court throughout a series of six or seven hearings, costing the county quite a bit of money for trying to disobey the Constitution and the Uniform Commercial Code, which says that if they refuse tender under Section 3-603, and that's federal law, which is also embodied in all state statutes, 3-603 says that if tender of payment of an obligation to pay an instrument is made to a person entitled to enforce the instrument and the tender is refused, there is discharge. And the judge finally did rule in my favor on that.
Interestingly. So we all pay our traffic tickets in pennies and they turn us down and we're basically in the clear is what you're saying.
Yes, I mean, fines, code violations, traffic or parking tickets, their intentional voluntary act of discharging refusing tender, which is the physical offering of the gold or silver coin, that act is a discharge of the obligation. And I mean, I would have been crazy to give the clerk the silver eagles, but I thought that just with those two laws going into court, I won. I didn't have any arguments against me. The state attorney tried to say once that the UCC doesn't apply here, and I asked for proof, but he couldn't answer the argument. Like I said, this is something that would cost the county. You know, they want the legal system to act like a conveyor belt, and this would just cost whatever court's trying to prosecute you after you discharge your obligation, then it would cost them so much more money. The first argument I tried, which was valid, but the judge didn't give a reason for ruling against, which I dropped off promissory notes. And see, the UCC allows you to act as a bank. I dropped off promissory notes, and the clerk returned them or surrendered the instrument, which is another way of discharging the obligation. But that was my first argument the judge did not agree with. But one could also try to apply that also. That's that would come under UCC 3-604.
Okay, well, I'm going to kind of break in on you here, because one of the problems we have right now is that everybody can get all kind of tied up in all these very fine points of law, but the bottom line is, when you have a court system and indeed an entire government that is taking the opinion that the law is what they say it is at the moment, these kind of arguments eventually unravel the moment you find an unsympathetic judge. We know that in Sullivan versus United States, Judge James C. Fox stated right in the court record that as far as he could tell, the 16th Amendment failed ratification. And therefore, there shouldn't be an income tax. And then he turns around in the same court record and says, but, you know, since we've gotten away with it this long, we're just going to go on continuing acting as if it's the law. So I know a lot of people are looking for a magic bullet somewhere in the law that says they can, you know, basically tell the government to stick it. But the bottom line is that the laws get changed. And what we're seeing right now in the court system is an ever-growing tendency to transfer any incurred costs back onto the public. There was this state Supreme Court case up in Washington State where the police basically kicked down the door in a drug raid, totally messed up the place. There were no drugs, no arrests. The owner of the property had actually said to the cops, let me unlock the door so you don't have to break it down. They still broke it down. And the state said, we don't have to pay for the damages. This was we were doing our job. And even though there weren't actually any drugs there, we're not liable. And so this, the owner of the property is now having to pay for all the damages. This is an indicator of the attitude that we have by the court system toward the people. They're not interested in what is right. They're not interested in what is moral. They're interested, as you said, it's a giant conveyor belt to move the money from you to them. And they're not interested in the technicalities of the law anymore. And when we come back next segment, I'm going to kind of get into that regarding the bailout bill. And, so what the American people have to do is, you can go wandering through all the law. And, you know, the law is a lot like, well, for example, the Bible, where it says one thing in one place and one thing in another. And when you make an argument based on this point over here, there's another law over there that says something completely different. And the government comes back.
Well, I always brought money in with me to pay in case they wanted to put me in jail, because these were hearings to show cause why I should not be held in contempt for paying these tickets that I had plea bargained or agreed to pay. So, I was always ready to pay, but of course it cost the state so much more money, and it did end up in my favor. But if it had not, well, of course I would have just been out a little bit of work, which I could make up. But, in their case, they spent all this time, and they brought in at the end a clerk of court, county attorney, state attorney, city clerk, and all these guys to say, yes, we can accept the money and deposit it into our accounts now, but my brother tried it once more, and they lied because they will not accept Silver Eagles. So, they're acting as the de facto government or the corporate municipality.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are.
Government.
That's exactly what they are. And remember, those courts, those judges, those people, they are paid out of tax revenue and fine revenue and collection revenue. So, of course, don't expect objectivity. Chris, we got to let you go because we've got to take a break for some commercials. We're going to stop here and take a few deep breaths, get a little bit more coffee, and we will be back after these words from our sponsors.
He's scared, he's lonely, and he knows he screws up everything in life. But I guess that's the way it goes when you're the Antichrist. He's aroused by all things evil. That's why he wants more war. When he gets to the other side, maybe he'll wonder what it's all been for.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here as we continue on our Saturday morning. Looking at the mailbox real quick, got an email here. This is in response to a story we ran earlier in the week about how T-shirts promoting a given candidate are not going to be allowed at the polling places. And I don't know whether that means people are just not going to be allowed to vote at all, or if they're going to have to strip naked before they are allowed in the voting booth, or how they're going to handle it. But this listener is writing in, I think a great grassroots way of exposing voter fraud is for everyone to go vote wearing a T-shirt in the color of the party they're voting for. If you're voting Republican, wear red. If you're voting Democrat, wear blue. If you're voting any third party, wear yellow, since the elections are rigged anyway. Vote third party just to let them know how many of us are really pissed off. I actually think that's a very good idea. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult for anybody to say, well, you're not allowed to wear a colored T-shirt to vote in. And this may actually get something done. Now, I want to go back to something Chris in Florida was talking about, and that is sort of working through the legal system. We already know that our government does not obey the law itself. And the bailout bill, as it was passed, may actually be unconstitutional. We've put a couple of articles up about this now by some people who really understand the Constitution. And the bottom line is that the Constitution was set up so that any revenue spending bills, any bills to spend public money, had to originate in the House of Representatives. Then the Senate could amend them after it had passed in the House of Representatives. Then it would go to the President for signature. The Treasury would then disperse the money to whatever task was at hand. Now, as we know this last week, the House of Representatives voted down the measure on Monday. Then, amazingly, on Wednesday, the Senate took the original House proposal, which was three pages from Secretary Paulson. They amended it into this 450-page behemoth filled with all kinds of pork, and then passed it by a wide margin, which we knew they were going to do it. And then yesterday, of course, with a considerable amount of arm twisting and outright threats of martial law by the president, the bill was passed. Bush signed it, and the Dow plunged. The unemployment numbers took a leap upward, and it looks like for all the promises that this bailout was going to help our lives, now we're being told not to expect any benefit from it for several months down the road. In other words, we just got screwed again, but we already knew that. But the point I want to make is the manner in which this bill went through Congress is unconstitutional. The Senate cannot amend a bill the House has voted down. So when the Senate passed the bill, they were initiating a revenue disbursement bill, a revenue allocation bill, which they're not allowed to do under the Constitution. And the reason the Founding Fathers set this up is really quite simple. It was known back in 1776, 1779, that then, as today, the senators were likely to be from the wealthier parts of American society. And the representatives were going to be much more down-to-earth connection with the ordinary people. In a way, this is not unlike the British system, where there's a House of Lords, the very rich people, and then there's a House of Commons, which are supposed to be more in touch with the common people. And between the two of them, they work things out. So it was thought that senators, because they themselves were quite rich and used to spending money freely, that they might be somewhat reckless with the budget of the United States government. And that is why the power to authorize spending was reserved to the House of Representatives, who are supposed to represent the people. They did not in this case. We have senators and representatives on videotape admitting that the calls and faxes and visits to their office were 9-1 opposed to this bailout measure, and they still passed it. But if somebody were to take this bailout measure to the United States Supreme Court and point out in the Constitution it is the House that should pass the bill, then the Senate amends it, they would have to declare this bill unconstitutional and null and void. Now, unfortunately, in this particular time of our nation's history, where Congress is basically a rubber stamp for the president, for the decider. We may see that probably not happen. And even if it does, Bush will just issue a signing statement. He might even just declare the bailout in effect through executive order once the election is over and the Republicans don't have to take any more hits for what happened. But it is unconstitutional the way that it was done. It really was. Now, last night I actually had a dream about what I'm going to call the movie script version of what just happened with the bailout, because there are so many odd aspects about this. There is, first of all, the fact that everybody was supporting it on both sides of the aisle. Republicans were supporting it. Democrats were supporting it even more. McCain supported it. Obama supported it. He's taking a hit for that, as well he should. I mean, the American people were totally opposed to this thing because we're going to have to pay for it. And we got steamrollered. Now we're finding out that most of this money is going out of the country to foreign banks, World Bank of Scotland, banks in China, banks in Israel, all over the place. It's not here. Apparently, this idea that if a clause had been put into this bill saying that they had to be American assets in order to be covered by the bailout, Bush was going to veto it. That was one of the threats that came down. I mean, we've got congressmen on YouTube saying that they were told, point blank, if this bill did not pass, Bush was going to declare martial law in the streets of America. That's the threat that was used to get this thing passed. So, in the movie script version of this thing, and I stress that because this is a fantasy. I don't know that this is what happened, but this seems to fit all the facts. And that is that, 2 weeks ago, and this is after Bush and McCain and everybody said the fundamentals of our economy are strong. Remember a month ago, everybody said, yeah, we've got some tough times, but the economy is fundamentally strong. The core fundamentals are still there. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks ago, and in the movie version, what it is President Bush calls in the leadership of Congress and both candidates, and he says, okay, here's the deal. I have a couple of nuclear weapons planted around the country, and if I set them off, I can declare martial law and become decider for life for the United States. But considering the condition of the country as I'm leaving it, you know, as I've got it right now, it's not such an attractive job anymore. So here's what I'm going to do. If you guys will help me rip off $1 trillion from the American taxpayer and launder it through some foreign banks, you know, that are pretending to have a bunch of bad U.S. mortgages on their books, I will leave quietly and call the whole deal off, and then one of you gets to be president, and you guys get to go back to doing whatever it was you were doing before I stole the elections in 2000 and 2004. And I know it sounds absurd, and maybe Saturday Night Live will do something, or a Daily Show will spoof this kind of a thing, but if you look at all the available facts and how hard everybody was pushing to sell this thing, I can't come up with another theory that actually makes any more sense than this one. But like I said, it's the movie script version. I'm not saying that's what really happened. But boy, you know, talk about the living incarnation of Dr. Evil, and it almost fits. Bush could take his $1 trillion ransom, go down to that little piece of land he bought in South America and set up his own nation. Could call it Bush Country if he wants. Anyway, but on a more serious note, I think the biggest problem about this bailout system is twofold. First of all, it absolutely converts the United States to a fascist economy. And, okay, looks like we're at the end of this hour. My, how time flies when you're screaming at the government. We're going to take a break here for some commercials and news. We'll be back for hour two of our show following the news. So until then, listen carefully to the news and Aloha America. And hello, welcome back to the show here, and sorry for the delay there getting back in. I was tied up doing something else here. All right, anyway, welcome back to the show, hour two. Greetings to our ground affiliates who are tuning in and sharing the show with us. I was looking at some emails coming in from listeners during the break here. Don't you feel that there is an acceleration going on in those who are currently overtaking the country, in fact, who have already done so, and it will lead to revolution? And I mean their complete coming out as revolution, or our returning to our Constitution and the rule of laws, irrespective of race, religion, creed, or other things used to separate one man from another to benefit who place themselves at the top. I think it's obvious we're heading toward a crisis. of some kind. And, you know, it is entirely possible that we're being maneuvered to transform this nation into something new. And this kind of gets back to what I was saying before we went to the news break, that the two problems with the bailout, the first one is that it fundamentally changes the economic nature of the United States of America. When this country started out, it was basically a free market economy. Everybody could work and build businesses. And one of the things that made America great in its very early history is we were operating free of an overburden of nobility that simply presumed that everything that we did belonged to them by some mechanism or other. That was the whole point of the American Revolution, was to get rid of this hereditary rulership class that owned everything, supposedly, to whom our allegiance and our money was constantly to be delivered. And no matter how hard we worked, we could not advance ourselves because we were not of the nobility. And we kicked all that out. And then we had a nation where anybody who wanted to work hard could become prosperous. George Washington owned a distillery. Ben Franklin was into publishing and inventing all kinds of really cool things. John Hancock sold insurance. Paul Revere was a silversmith. And they worked hard, they made their own products, and they were allowed to keep the wealth from their own work. That was the essence of American enterprise back then. And along with that, of course, went the idea that when you took your chance, when you started a business, you could fail. Because that's what freedom really means. It means the freedom to be successful. It means the freedom to fall flat on your face, the freedom to be very, very alone in your failures. And that breeds personal responsibility. With the passage of the bailout bill, our fundamental economic system has been changed. And it's been changed to that of a fascist model. And before I get into that, let me explain by looking at the Soviet Union, which was a communist model. And their theory of operation was that all profits and all losses were socialized, so that money that came in was spent on everybody. When things went bad and there were losses, everybody had to chip in to cover it all. That's the essence of communism. In fascism, the model is that profits are privatized. If your company is doing well, you're allowed to keep the money from that. But if you go into losses, that is socialized. Now, the theory behind that, going back to Benito Mussolini, was that enterprise, businesses, corporations needed to feel that they could take chances and grow and develop new products and new services and new businesses without the fear of going totally broke in the process. So that was the rationale for this kind of model of economy, where if you had a successful business, you got to keep the money from it. But if you went bust, basically the nation as a whole would pick up the tab. And that is where we are with this bailout model. Profits are privatized. These CEOs are still making multi-million dollar packages and their stock portfolios and everything, but losses are now socialized, and that is a fascist model. Now, the other issue about the bailout, and I touched on this yesterday, and I want to mention it again for the benefit of our weekend audience that doesn't tune into the weekday show. The worst thing about this whole bailout that I can see right now is the message that it sends to young people in this country. Because one of the things we as the older generation like to imagine that we can do is inspire the young people to go out, study hard, learn skills, invent new things, become entrepreneurs, become basically the leaders of the future society that we hope our country is turning into. We want them to feel that there's some point to studying hard and growing and learning new skills. And we have just taken that away from them. Because what this bailout has sent as a message to everybody in the United States, and the young people are looking at it very carefully, is we've just sent a message that it doesn't matter how hard you work or what you earn. The government can come and take it away at any time if they can just come up with an excuse why it's necessary. And it's going to be very, very difficult to get the young people to be excited about building careers and advanced education and starting new businesses if the far end of a lifetime of work and achievement is it all gets taken away. and given to the people who've already got so much money they can't even remember how many homes they live in or how many homes they have scattered around the country like McCain does. And I think this bailout, yeah, it's really good for Wall Street and it's really bad for the American people, but what it's worst of for is literally the future generation of this country. We may see a whole new lost generation. And if you don't know what I mean about that, it's the generation of people who survived World War I. And they'd had this horrible experience that everything they'd ever built, everything they'd ever worked for, was gone in an instant. And they dropped out. They became the beatniks. In the 60s, they were the hippies. We're going to see that all over again. We're going to have a generation of kids who just say, I'm just going to do the bare minimum to get by. Why should I work hard if the government's just going to take it away from me arbitrarily down the road? And they're going to drop out, and frankly, I can't blame them. You know, it's how are you going to stand up in front of a classroom of young kids and say, study hard, work hard, make yourself better? Because what are you going to tell them they're going to get for it? You know, if you're lucky, the government may let you keep a little bit of what you've earned in your entire lifetime. That's going to be a really, really hard sell. Now, getting back to some of the other news here, a couple of things I wanted to cover just basically in this last few minutes here. Everyone's talking about taxes and not paying taxes and so forth and so on. A couple of interesting items have surfaced regarding John McCain and Sarah Palin. Now, as you know from this last week, Sarah Palin has come under fire because she apparently collected some $17,000 in per diem claims against the state of Alaska for days when she stayed in her own personal home as opposed to the governor's mansion. Now, there's an issue about whether she was really entitled to that. But the problem is that because she was staying in her own home, these per diem fees of $17,000 don't represent pass-through expenses from hotels and restaurants. It's income. And it was not declared as such on her income taxes, so she may owe taxes and penalties on that money. Now, hard on the heels of that, examination of Senator John McCain's tax returns are showing no mention at all about gambling. Now, we know that McCain loves to gamble. He goes to the casinos all the time. He's very much connected with the gambling industry. And he gambles a lot. He's seen gambling all the time. And the point is, the way the tax laws are set up, you can't just gamble a bunch of money, take your winnings, subtract your losing, or your losses, and if there's nothing left, you don't declare it. It doesn't work that way. Gambling winnings have to be declared on your income taxes. And then, if you're keeping track of your losses, you will subtract them only up to the amount of your winnings in a different part of the tax form. And McCain did not do that. So already we have a case of, the elites of our society are playing by a different set of tax rules than the rest of us. And, again, it just calls into question the integrity of the entire platform that the GOP is running this year. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this segment. We're going to take a break here and keep looking at the headlines. If you'd like to join us on the air, the number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Obviously, the economy continues to be a major, major focus of the news and, indeed, of the political campaign right now. Yesterday, we reported a story to you on how this 90-year-old woman in Akron, Ohio, shot herself, attempting to commit suicide just as sheriff's deputies were trying to evict her from her foreclosed home. And obviously, this kind of an image does not make the nation look very good. And we are hearing this morning that Fannie Mae, which took over the mortgage on her house and had started the eviction proceedings, has now called the eviction off and forgiven the debt. And if she does not die in the hospital from her self-inflicted wounds, they're going to basically let her go back and live out her life in her home. And, you know, I don't want to encourage people out there to go start shooting themselves to try and get out of their mortgage, because I think really it's only going to work the first time. But it does sort of underscore the fact that public image is very important still to these financial institutions, especially with all the anger and hostility of the bailout. So if you are in contention with such an entity, you need to think about, what can I do to publicize the iniquity of the deal or the unfairness of what has happened? And you need to get that out there, and you need to make it public, and I'll tell you why. Because we are still hearing now that the blame for this economic mess is falling on all those irresponsible Americans who bought larger homes they couldn't afford, or big screen TVs they couldn't afford, and they just were going wild with the credit cards without any responsibility. And that, of course, is complete nonsense. At the time these people bought the homes, including this 90-year-old woman, at the time they refinanced them even, at the time they bought the big screen TV or the new car, they could afford it. 99% of Americans who were making these deals and buying things on credit looked at their finances and said, yeah, we can afford it right now. And then the high-paying jobs in our country started to disappear, courtesy of the U.S. government, which gave huge tax credits to corporations to ship those jobs overseas. And that's when Americans who were in debt got into trouble. It isn't that they borrowed too much, it's that they had a reasonable expectation that they were going to continue making the money they were already making. Especially because we were always hearing these pronouncements about how wonderful the economy was and everything was going up in price and, you know, all the rest of it. And all of a sudden, the only thing not going up in price are wages and salaries. They're going down. People making $75,000 a year, all of a sudden they're making $35,000 a year. And no wonder they got into trouble. And that's another reason why this bailout, which had no protection for homeowners, worth mentioning, was an insult. It was a bailout of the bankers and investment companies and all on the backs of the American working class. And you know something? In taking $700 billion away from the American people, it's going to make it that much harder for us to be making payments. You know, let me give you a clue about what's going on with the mindset in Washington, D.C. One of the provisions they put in this bailout bill is they raised the maximum insurable deposit limit on savings accounts from $100,000 to $250,000. Now, how many people listening to this broadcast have got $100,000 in a savings account? Not too many, I would suspect. And so for them to put this provision in the bill and think that it's an inducement to support it reveals that our Congress really doesn't understand just how bad things are out here in real working street or working class Main Street America. We don't have $100,000 in a savings account. It doesn't matter to us how high you raise that maximum insurable limit. It doesn't affect us. You know, they're just glibly talking about adding another $7,000 to every taxpayer's chit. We don't have it. We, the people, don't have it. We have been taxed already to the edge of collapse. One out of every five households is already in trouble with the IRS trying to get caught up. And Congress just blithely says, oh, we'll go back and get money. That's their solution to everything. And you know something? Here's a point to think about before we get back to the phones. The Federal Reserve had already pumped about $600 billion in liquidity into the financial system to keep it from collapsing. Now they're doing another $700 billion from us into the system, plus $150 billion in pork barrel to make it more palatable to the politicians who voted it through. What happens when credit swap defaults go bad? Are they going to ask for a bailout? What happens, you know, we've already got the auto industry asking for a bailout. Everybody's solution right now is a bailout. From whom? From the taxpayer. Right now, the American taxpayer is being viewed by our government as this bottomless well of money that they can go on dipping into and dipping into and dipping into anytime they need to fix the problems or patch over the problems with the economy. And I say that patch over because even the bailout bill's strongest supporters admit it doesn't change the fundamentals about the way the economy got into this mess. It's basically, from the point of view of the banks and mortgage houses, it's a reset button on their giant open-air Nintendo set they have that they call Wall Street. They hit the reset button, all the bad investments they made vanish magically, get dumped on the taxpayer, they get all their money back so they can play again. They can start the game over. It's not going to work because the playing environment, meaning us, is different. We're far more skeptical of all these promises about easy credit. And we know our own limits. We're not making as much money as we used to. We can't borrow the money we used to. We won't let ourselves borrow the money that we used to. So the game isn't going to play the same way it did before, which means it's going to wind up being worse. We're going to go back to the phones. Clarence in Oklahoma is calling back in apparently with a postscript. Clarence, what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind right now, Mike, is the fact that, well, for one thing, we haven't heard from Tom from Sweden.
Yeah, we haven't, actually.
And the other thing is, I'll tell you just real quickly, because I know we're coming up on the break and you'll need to go on the other side here. You know, I'm Cherokee, and I'm a voting member of the Cherokee Nation here in Oklahoma. Look, when you look at it and you have that kind of perspective through my ancestors telling me, now, part of them, you know, part of them were all European, but part of them were Cherokee. But when I look at the whole perspective, this is what they did. The Cherokees, the government has done this stuff. It even did it back 150 plus years ago. They ran them out of their homelands in Tennessee, Georgia, all the places where their homelands were, because they had found some gold there, white prospectors.
Mm-hmm.
So they run the Cherokees to, they said, okay, and they run them to Oklahoma. That's where I'm from, Oklahoma.
Yeah, the Trail of Tears.
Yes. They run them to there, and that was done under the auspices of the United States government.
Okay, Clarence, we got a hold there. Stick with us until the other side of the break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his throne. In shackles we will bind them, to the terror they'll be shown. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and call the bars Homeland Security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And Clarence, by goodness, ask and ye shall receive. We have Thomas from Sweden on the line. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mr. Rivera. Good morning, Clarence. Thank you. I really feel appreciated, Clarence.
I really appreciate talking to you because, you know, we have to exchange either emails or something here and off the air or something. But I'll tell you, And this is what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you this. And what's happening right now, there is an allegory to it, or in our past history, in the 1830s. And that's when the Cherokee Nation lived in Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina. That was their area. But then the Europeans moved in, and they found gold. They didn't want the Indians there because they basically they said, we have rights to the land. We lived here for, umpteen hundreds of years, And what they did was they got laws passed by the U.S. Congress. And not that, but not just the Congress, but actually basically it was the local states that kicked them out. And they said, okay, there's gold, and the Indians don't need it, but the Europeans do, so we're going to move you. But that was in cahoots with the federal government, and the federal government said, okay, we'll send troops down there, and we will force march them. They put them first in, you want to talk about FEMA camps? They first took them and put them, they ran them out of their homes, put them in forts, army forts. And held them until the movement was done. Now they tried to fight it, but they didn't fight it like I would like to have fought it if I had been there. But their chief, John Ross, was a lawyer. He'd been through Harvard Law or some big law school, and he fought this thing rather than fight a revolution. They decided they'd fight it in the courts. And he went to the Supreme Court. He went to the courts, and he went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court held that the government was in violation of the Constitution, and it was not lawful to remove my tribe. Andrew Jackson was the president at the time. Andrew Jackson claimed to be a friend of the Indians, but no, when it came down to it, he wasn't. He said, the Supreme Court's made their decision, let them enforce it. At that point, he should have been impeached, because he had just violated his oath of office to make sure that all decisions of the federal government should be should be obeyed. And then they put my people on the Trail of Tears. And they force marched them through the winter. And a quarter of them, one-fourth of them, died. That's why it's called the Trail of Tears. And I think we're seeing a modern-day version of this, and that's all I
Well, we definitely, are. It's a repeat of history, and not to the same extent, but if you look at the history of Hawaii, which is where I'm sitting at the moment.
And I understand that. I've seen the deals on that, how that happened.
Yeah, the United States government repeatedly broke its own laws and international treaties in its quest to acquire the unsinkable battleship Hawaii. So anyway, we're going to let you two go because we got to cover a couple of other things here before the end of the show today.
Okay.
But
well,
thank you
is
very
there
much
any way
for...
I can talk to him offline, or can we still be tied up?
I don't know. That's up to Ethan. Okay, Ethan's
going to
hook you two together. All right, so we're going to let them go talk offline and get their email and everything set aside. All right, I wanted to cover a couple of stories. This one is going out to the family of all of our young men and women in uniform that are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're getting this story from Stars and Stripes magazine. Military doctors are seeing a resurgence of a rare and sometimes fatal type of pneumonia that is striking young troops who started smoking while deployed downrange. And they're saying three-fourths of those troops came down with the illness while serving in Iraq. Now, the spin of the article is, it's because they're smoking, and it's strange that this seems to be aggravated worse than they would be getting smoking back in the United States. And they're throwing their hands up in amazement, and they don't know what's going on, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of the same runaround we got for Gulf War syndrome. What is going on was actually found 5 years ago by Dr. Pat Doyle, who said the problem is It's a combination of the smoking, which coats the lungs with this very sticky tar, and breathing depleted uranium dust from these armor-penetrating weapons that they are using on the battlefield. And the problem with the depleted uranium is, when it's still in its metallic form, as a munition, it's reasonably safe to handle. But when it is deployed, when it is used, it vaporizes. And the problem is that that vapor of depleted uranium oxidizes. It forms a very fine dust. And any time the wind blows and picks it up, especially during the dust storm season, it's in the air, it's in suspension, people breathe it in, and if their lungs are coated with this tar from smoking, the dust has a greater tendency to remain in the lungs rather than to be exhaled. Now, we know the depleted uranium that the U.S. has been using in the Middle East is a major problem. They are already detecting the airborne isotopes of it up in Europe and even in London, England. And I would suspect probably by now anybody collecting dust samples and using a mass spectrometer on the eastern seaboard of the United States might be able to detect it. So, once again, we're getting the indication that our young men and women are being exposed to radioactive materials by our own government, which is attempting to basically deny the responsibility for the medical problems they're going to be suffering from this stuff down the road. Because these kids are going to come home with leukemia and lung cancer and all these other illnesses. They're going to spend the rest of their life just withering away in one of the most painful deaths imaginable. And the U.S. government's attitude is, well, that's war. Bad things happen. You know, it's not our problem. The early days of nuclear testing in Nevada, above ground testing, there was a nuclear test that was done where they literally took a bunch of soldiers, they gave them sunglasses to protect them from the atomic bomb, and marched them right into the aftermath of a nuclear explosion to determine how easily ground troops could exploit a breach in enemy lines opened up with a nuclear weapon. And everybody, all those ground troops involved in that test, came down with cancers, leukemia, terrible, devastating, debilitating diseases, and the U.S. government responded by Congress passing a law saying, it's not our problem. We're not responsible. You were a soldier. These kind of things happen when you're a soldier, and that's just the end of it. And now we're seeing a repeat of that all over again. And so if you are military back from Iraq, if you're the family of military recently back from Iraq, if they're suffering any kind of strange respiratory symptoms, get them tested. The problem with the depleted uranium is it is primarily an alpha emitter, which means you can't detect the radioactivity from outside the body. It's got to be done with an endotracheal bronchoscopy and take a sample of the coating of the lungs. And it takes a special kind of radiation meter to detect alpha wave radiation. Most radiation detectors detect beta and gamma radiation just fine, but unless they've got a mica window into the detector tube that will pass the alpha particles, most commercial over-the-counter radiation detectors won't detect alpha radiation. But your body picks it up. It is very toxic material, and this appears to be the real cause of Gulf War syndrome. And what a terrible thing to do to the troops who put on that uniform and go fight the wars. Even if it's a war for conquest and profit, these kids don't deserve that kind of future. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of today's show after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of today's show. And thanks to all the callers that have been calling in and just making it kind of an interesting time for all of us. And again, thanks to Ethan for twiddling the dials and feeding the giant mutant hamster we have in that little wire wheel hooked to the generator that runs all of this stuff. Looking at the mailbox, Got an email from a listener. Excuse my ignorance, but isn't there some way to get the governments of the 50 states to remove from office all members of the federal government that voted for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, the Patriot Act, and this latest travesty of justice, $700 billion bailout? In point of fact, if three-quarters of the states were to adopt legislative resolutions calling for the dissolution of the federal government, technically under the law, it is supposed to happen because the way this was country was set up, the states were to retain ultimately all the power. Back when I started the What Really Happened website 15 years ago, there was actually a resolution that was making the rounds of various state legislatures called the Ultimatum Resolution, and it simply said that when the federal debt goes over $6 trillion, the federal government is hereby dissolved. They were not able to get a sufficient number of states to pass this legislation, mostly because everybody working in state government, by and large, they have ambitions to move on to the federal government, which has a much larger trough to feed at. And so, you know, where the states really lost their power was when senators became elected officials, because up until that point, the people were electing their own representatives to the House of Representatives, but the senators were appointed by the governor of the state, and that gave the governor quite a bit more influence in terms of determining the future course of the nation. Then they changed the rules to make senators elected officials, and that basically rendered the state governments somewhat impotent. So most state governments, as Sarah Palin has demonstrated, they aspire to higher office, and they're not going to do anything that to really rock the boat, as it were. Although, obviously, there are very very much alive secessionist movements in quite a number of states right now, including Alaska. Amazingly enough, Sarah Palin was a supporter of the Alaska secession movement early in her career. She has since changed her mind after seeing, you know, just what kind of goodies and perks come along with signing onto the federal government. We have several secessionist movements here in Hawaii. And again, under the exact literal interpretation of U.S. law, Hawaii is not legally a state. But we can't seem to convince the federals to pull their troops out of here and go home. Same thing in Texas. There are secession movements still in California. And a variety of other states. A lot of people are saying, you know, we have a legal right to secede. And they do. Unfortunately, as the Civil War demonstrated, the federal government thinks they have a right to come in and force you to rejoin the Union under force of arms, and they won that last argument. Now, I want to close up today's show. I've been getting a lot of email from people. As I said before, there's so much anger out there, and I don't blame them. I get email from people saying, I'm angry, I don't know what to do. Time will solve that mystery, I'm sure. I get a lot of email from people saying, this makes me so sad, and my advice is, don't be sad. Be angry. Anger is going to work for you a lot better than being sad. Sad means you've given up. Anger means you feel like you can fix it. Anger conquers fear. And right now, what the U.S. government wants you to be is afraid to stand up and say, no, that's my $700 billion, and you get your mitts off of it. So anger is definitely a lot better than sadness. But I also get a lot of emails criticizing me for making remarks about tarring and feathering and various other things. And, you know, they're coming back saying, well, you don't really want to pour tar and feathers all over Sarah Palin, do you? And no, I don't really, not personally. Jell-O maybe, but that's a topic for another website entirely. But I use tar and feathers as a metaphor because it is something that was regularly done by the American patriots against the British tax collectors and enforcers of various British law back at a time when, once again, we had a King George in charge of this country who was taking our money to spend on foreign wars and basically ignoring what the American people needed done with that money. And we're in exactly the same situation again. I mean, Senator Feinstein got up on television and admitted 90% of the people calling her office were opposed to the bailout, but she still voted for it. That means that the senators and the representatives of the Congress are not representing the will of the people. That's the without representation part. They've just added $700 billion to our collective tax bill. That is taxation. So it doesn't matter how you put it together. We have taxation without representation. And in the public school I went to in New Hampshire all those years ago, taxation without representation was considered a just cause to kick out King George. Either one of them. So I personally don't like the idea of violence because it's bad for tourism. It's rough on the landscaping. But I see us heading toward a crisis where I think there's going to be some violence. And obviously so does the government, or they wouldn't be pulling these troops back from Iraq and stationing them in the streets of America, supposedly with non-lethal weapons. But we just found out from NORTHCOM that in point of fact, all of these military units that are in our streets in defiance of posse comitatus, I might add, they have real lethal guns and tanks within easy reach at all times. So we have troops in the streets of America by the government to scare us into not objecting as we get financially raped. And that's a good word for it. So that's what's going on. I think we're going to see a period of violence in the not very distant future because our government is incapable of changing course. They are so totally under the control of the financial interests of this country that they can't change course. Let's face it, Goldman Sachs, which has been the head of the Plunge Protection Team, and is going to make out like a bandit on this $700 billion bailout. Let's see, they gave $691,000 to Barack Obama, $468,000 to Hillary Clinton, $229,000 to Mitt Romney, $208,000 to John McCain, $114,000 to Jim Hines, $111,000 to Rudolph Giuliani, $105,000 to Christopher Dodd, $66,000 to John Edwards, and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. All these people who were getting up on TV this last week and saying, we got to have the bailout, we got to have the bailout, we got to have the bailout. They're personally pocketing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the very Wall Street institutions that are going to be the beneficiaries of this bailout. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I don't have a price. It's probably a lot higher than most of the Congress critters out there. But the bottom line is, these people are not saying what they really believe. They're saying what they're hired to say. They are paid spokesmen and women for the financial industries. And the American people know it now. We have watched this last week as the media hard-sold this bailout plan onto us. And the American people are smart enough to realize it is a complete repeat of the SNL swindle that our president's father pulled back in the 1980s. Same exact methodology. Take all the restraints off the financial industry. The insiders make a huge amount of money very quickly. The losses get dumped on the American people. Same exact game plan. President Bush is probably celebrating that he succeeded in outdoing his father. Ego involved in this thing. And I think somewhere down the road, there's going to be an incident that will trigger a violent reaction among the American people. I know the U.S. government is getting ready to deal with it. I'm hoping it'll be as fast and relatively blood-free as the collapse of the Soviet Union, which is, I think, where the United States is heading. Or it may be as fast as the Romanian Revolution. I mean, 2 weeks before it all came apart, looking across Romania, if you weren't aware of what was going on inside the country, you would have said everything's fine here. They're perfectly okay with TV cameras looking down at every street corner at them. They're okay with the government reading their mail and listening to their phone calls without warrants. They're perfectly all right with all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, just a spark hit the people. A sporting event turned into a spontaneous political rally, and 2 weeks later, Ceausescu was dead on national television. I'd pay for that pay-per-view, by the way. This brings us to the end of our show today. We'll be back Monday with more of your phone calls, more news. I don't know. I got a bad feeling about next week. I think it's going to be a real rocky time because if the economy continues to go down despite the bailout, it's going to be obvious to everybody we were sold the world's biggest, most expensive lemon by the U.S. Congress and the media. So until Monday, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.